Well, hi, everyone. Not to confuse sermon series, but let me begin my message today with a common lie that we believe, that we've bought into in 21st century America. The lie says this. It says, my identity is tied to what I can accomplish. Now, listen, I appreciate hustle as much as the next guy. I grew up an athlete. I'm highly competitive at everything. I love entrepreneurial thinking. I'm eager to take the next hill. My wife runs her own company for many years, and we're in the thick of being ambitious. So it's just as easy for me as anyone else to get sucked into this mindset that my worth comes from my last accomplishment. And because our culture glorifies hustle, we wear extreme busyness like a badge of honor. The busier I am, the more important I look. Even though we've all seen the negative effects left behind in the form of broken marriages and moral failures of people who are burned out and exhausted. And so Wayne Mueller asked the question, how did we get so terribly lost in a world saturated with striving and grasping, yet somehow absent of joy and delight? And he says, I suggest it is this, we have forgotten the Sabbath. So we're in week 4 of identifying and implementing sacred rhythms into our lives that would connect us to Jesus and care for our souls and allow us to bear fruit. We've talked about solitude. We said time alone with God will revive your soul. And last week we talked about silence. We said quiet spiritual listening will revive your soul. And today we're going to talk about Sabbath. And the big idea today is this, a weekly sacred rhythm of Sabbath will revive your soul. And can I just say at the outset here that you have to work hard to rest. I want you to listen to this passage in Hebrews 4, 9 through 11. The author says this. He says, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from his own work, just as God did from his. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest so that no one will fall by following their example of disobedience. So the writer of Hebrews is acknowledging here that it won't come easy, that you're going to have to make every effort, he said. You're going to have to work hard to rest. And so today, I want to talk about the ancient practice of Sabbath. And I want to begin just very basically with asking, what is Sabbath? Well, the word Sabbath just means to cease. Biblically and historically, it is a 24-hour period each week that's devoted to rest from your work, to be unavailable for the world so that you can be available for God. And on one hand, the Sabbath is an act of humility. It's a way of reminding yourself that you're not God, that if you stop producing for a day, the world will go on just fine without you. On the other hand, Sabbath is an act of rebellion. It's a way to stand against the prevailing value of our society, that your whole worth is tied to your productivity. Some of the favorite books that I've read about Sabbath have highlighted this idea of rebellion. One of them is called Sabbath as Resistance by Walter Brueggemann. Another, Subversive Sabbath by A.J. Swoboda. And of course, Comer's Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. So let's talk for a moment about where did Sabbath come from? Obviously, the OG Sabbath goes back to the creation account where God rested on the seventh day. But it doesn't reemerge until after slavery in Egypt. Remember, God had brought his people out of slavery. They'd endured 400 years of brutality. Egyptian overlords had forced them to make bricks. And in slavery, the Jewish people didn't have a name. They had a number. And their identity and their only value in the world came from the number of bricks they could produce. They worked on a very strict quota. And over the years, the Egyptians kept adding expectations to the quota. And instead of just making bricks, now they added gathering straw to their workload and still had to meet the same production numbers. In fact, we read about a scene where the foreman, the slave driver, comes in and he says, you Hebrew slaves say that you're worshiping God, but I think you're just being lazy. Go now and work, he says, and no straw will be given to you, but you must still deliver the same number of bricks. They were punished for their religion, and the demands on them were merciless. So the Hebrew slaves were crying out, you know, how long, O Lord? And for generation after generation, and you know the story, finally God intervened, and Moses was chosen to lead the people out of Egypt, and they escaped through the parted Red Sea, and Pharaoh and his armies were swallowed up behind them. God took his people into the desert, and there he cared for them. He led them, he fed them, he provided for them, and he began, listen, the long process of breaking the yoke of slavery off their backs. He began helping them to understand that they had a name and not a number, that their true identity was children of God and not slaves of Pharaoh. One of the gifts he gave them in this process was the Ten Commandments. It's over in Exodus 20, and you can turn there if you'd like to follow along in your Bible or device. These are 10 guidelines to reorient them to life with God and with each other. Instructions about how their identity as his children should get lived out in real life. And so the first three commandments, they dealt with their relationship with God. They're vertical commandments. And so he said, you know, have no other gods before me and make no man-made images and don't use the Lord's name inappropriately. They're about our relationship with God. And then the last six commandments, they dealt with their relationship with other people. They were the horizontal commandments. Honor your father and mother. Don't murder each other. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't lie about your neighbor. Don't get grabby, you know, with other people's stuff. Now, if you're counting, that's only 9 commandments, 3 vertical, 6 horizontal. And embedded in the middle is commandment number 4. And it's the longest, it's the most comprehensive commandment by far. And its placement in the middle of this list is not by accident. Commandment number 4 provides a bridge between a healthy vertical relationship with God and a healthy horizontal relationship with our fellow humans. It's the longest commandment and is profound in its prominence, especially when seen in light of 400 years of slavery under Pharaoh. So let me read to you Exodus 20, 8 through 11, the fourth commandment. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. And on it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who's within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth and the sea and all that is in them and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So God takes us all the way back to the creation account. But remember, from creation at the beginning of Genesis until right now in Exodus 20, the Sabbath is never mentioned in the Bible, not until after slavery, which gives us a clue that this command is about establishing identity. It means to belong to God. He's essentially saying one day a week, you're going to stop making bricks. Why? Because God says you need to know that your worth goes much deeper than what you produce. You need to stop and realize that you're his child. Once a week, you need to press pause on the madness and just be in his presence, be in his holiness, be fully yourself. This is radically different from what the Israelites had known. And it's radically different from what we know too, by the way. God says, in order for your soul to be healthy, you must regularly rest. Life is designed to be lived in the rhythm of work and rest, hustle and renewal. But our 24/7 culture has demanded that you never slow down. And so we live our lives on the run, squeezing God in where we can. It means that we often live off of other people's faith on a podcast we listen to or a sermon because we don't have time to cultivate our own faith. It means we multitask so much that we're oblivious to the fact that we're constantly doing 3 things at once and we're never present anywhere. It means we're always on to the next thing. And as a result, few of us ever make our own direct relationship with God. And the result is that most people ignore the Sabbath. For most of you listening to me today, you've never even thought about it. You've never even considered one day a week of rest to focus your relationship with God. It's the one commandment in the 10 that you've become most comfortable breaking. But the opposite mistake can also happen. People can get fired up about the Sabbath and they get super legalistic about it. Like I know people, they won't mow their lawn, they won't play music, they won't lift a finger on the Sabbath. They take what was supposed to be a gift and they turn it into chains. Heavy-handed rules and regulations. And so to help us avoid these extremes, I want to talk to you about 3 important truths about the Sabbath. Here's the first. Sabbath provides a weekly rhythm to prioritize God. Like it's more than just a day off. Sabbath is a systematic opportunity to connect with God's divinity and to admit our own humanity. As I said earlier, the rhythm of rest was established by God's own example in creation. But think about it. It's not because God was pooped. Like he wasn't like, oh man, all this planet making is really starting to kill my back. Right? He wasn't like, ooh, look at this. I invented a cat and it was instantly possessed by the devil. I'd better take a break. No, God is all powerful. He didn't need a breather. He did it as an example for us to follow and as a built-in opportunity for us to connect with him and to worship him on a regular basis. Now, back in Exodus 28, remember what he said? He said, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Those 4 words in the English, to keep it holy, that they're only 1 word in the Hebrew, and the word means to consecrate or to set apart. He's saying, make a distinction between this one day, the Sabbath day, and the rest of your week. It's a day dedicated, consecrated to the Lord. And so on the Sabbath, the priests would double their sacrifice, for example. They increased their sacred activity. And for many of you, Sunday is a good day for Sabbath, since gathering with the church allows you to kind of a ready-made opportunity to increase your sacred activity. For those of us in ministry, we kind of have a gig on Sunday. And so typically I try to designate a 24-hour period, either Friday or Saturday, or part of Friday to part of Saturday, to just unplug and to rest and to prioritize my relationship with God. In our world, where you can work literally any day of the week, any time of the day, the specific day, I don't think, is quite as important as the weekly rhythm of rest and prioritization of your soul. So here's the second truth. Sabbath is both a gift and a test for us. And so Sabbath rhythm was given to us as a gift. I like what Kevin DeYoung says. He calls it an island of get to in a sea of have to. The commands of God were given not to oppress us. They were given to set us free. But as often is the case, people take this gift and they make it a burden. And so the Pharisees in Jesus' day, they were famous for this. In fact, many of the conflicts that Jesus had with the religious leaders in the Gospels were over Sabbath laws. Like he would heal someone or feed people or travel on the Sabbath, and they would get so angry. You see, they took a gift from God and they turned it into 39 laws for the Sabbath. So picture this. God gave them something good. He said, hey, you know what? Take a day off. Rest. Spend time with me. Recalibrate your soul and your identity to be reminded that you're my child. And the religious people came along and they said, oh, perfect. We need to put together a rule book for this. And people are like, really? We need a rule book for a day off? And they're like, yes. We're going to arrest you and maybe even kill you if you disobey the day off rules. And you're not resting the right way. And people are like, I thought the whole point was just to take a break, and now you made this into a lot of work. Like you've given me a job description for my day off. You've ruined everything. I was going to take a nap, and now I've got to figure out whether or not I'm breaking any of the nap rules for my day off. It's no joke. The Pharisees had 39 rules for the Sabbath. And so they would come to Jesus and say, this is our understanding of the Sabbath. By what authority are you trying to redefine how we view this Sabbath? And Jesus was like, here's what you need to know, guys. I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. I was part of the three-man committee that decided we were going to do it this way. I was there when we originally decided this six-on and one-off deal. Trust me, this is the way it's supposed to work. And so Sabbath is a gift from God. We need to see it that way. I know for me, when I'm diligent with this rhythm, I'm just a better person. I'm more present. I'm more aware of Christ in my life. I'm more in tune with my limits. I'm more apt to delight in God as I go about my day. I'm more grounded. I'm more at peace. It's almost as if God knew what he was doing when he gave us this gift. But also Sabbath is a test. It's an opportunity to trust God's work more than you trust your own work. Like while you are pausing and replenishing your soul, at the same time, you're trusting that God is going to fill in the blanks and make up for the stuff that you weren't able to produce. And one of the things that wars against Sabbath is your own pride. Like if you go for weeks or months or even years without taking a day off, you become way too convinced of your own importance. Part of Sabbath is it's an expression of faith. When you close your eyes to nap, God is still running the universe just fine without you. So Sabbath provides a rhythm to prioritize God. Gives us both a gift and a test. Here's the third truth. Sabbath reminds us where our value comes from. When you Sabbath, it's a time for you to remember that ultimately your worth and value does not come from your to-do lists. It doesn't come from what you get done. It doesn't come from bottom lines or P&L reports. It doesn't come from your income status. It doesn't come from how far you've climbed up the ladder. It doesn't come from whether or not you achieved inbox zero this week. Your identity comes from who you are in Jesus Christ. You're a child of God. You're beloved. You're saved. You're rescued. You're transformed. You've been set apart. You're God's workmanship. You're born of God. You're alive with Christ. You're free from the law of sin and death. You have the mind of Christ. You have a peace that passes understanding. You are chosen. You're an overcomer. You're a joint heir with Christ. Your body is a temple. You are the light of the world. You are strengthened with all power. You are not ruled by fear. That's who you are. And listen, it's easy to forget all of that stuff when we're on the hamster wheel of life, but when we pause and we sit at his feet and we turn off the noise and we listen for his voice, we're reminded where our true value comes from. But without regular seasons of renewal and retreat, the human soul will become frantic. and it'll eventually start to wither. Sabbath is an opportunity to regularly stop and just say, you know, stuff got broken this week. I accomplished some things, I didn't accomplish other things. Some relationships struggled. Man, I took some hits this week. I made some gains too. And then you just let God heal you. You let him encourage you. You let him rebuke you. You let him mend you. You let him remind you. Whatever he needs to do, but to do it, guys, this is a full-scale rebellion against the values of our culture that's constantly urging you to hurry on to the next thing. And so instead, we're going to set aside some regular times where we learn what it means to be loved for who you are and not what you do. Reminded that your worth goes deeper than what you can produce. You are a child of God. And in a really beautiful way, Sabbath rest is like a foretaste of our eternal rest with Christ. It's a glimpse of heaven. And so every week we come again to Jesus, weary, burdened, and heavy laden. And if you listen close, you can almost hear the distant sounds of the future Sabbath festival. You can almost see the shadow glow of angels and feastal gathering, celebrating the King. And then we take his yoke upon us for another week, facing the moments and the decisions of life with him right by our side. And not only have we rested from our work, but we are now working from our rest. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Let me ask you, are you remembering the Sabbath, or have you forgotten it? Are you regularly retreating from the demands of your everyday life? Do you have a regular intentional time frame when you turn your phone off, when you don't answer emails, when you don't create, when you have no lists, when you don't produce? A time when your work is to simply be. Like so many of these practices, the key first step is to figure out when. When is your best shot at a 24-hour period? Maybe it's just a three-hour block to start off with. As I said, for many of you, it may be Sunday. In the Jewish culture, it was always sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. Parents of young families, like if you want to take a baby step toward this, either include your kids in Sabbath, or maybe you work out a kid swap program. Like one week they go to one family, the other to the next family. We can take baby steps towards Sabbath, and we need to avoid legalism, but let's at least agree that outright disobedience of this command to Sabbath is not an option for us. There are a few practical components that I'll leave you with today as to what makes for a good Sabbath. Many of my friends, that they'll light a candle in their home at the beginning of this 24-hour period, and they'll let it burn the whole time to acknowledge Sabbath is happening. But then these four elements of a great Sabbath make up the time. First is to unplug. Maybe it's your phone altogether. Maybe it's certain apps that you turn off, or you disconnect emails, certainly, but unplug. Second is to gather. One of the ancient components of Sabbath included communal feasting. Friends and family would be gathering around the table for a meal and a celebration of God's goodness. So maybe it's Sunday brunch if Sunday's your Sabbath. Third is worship. Like part of every great Sabbath is designating time to get lost in God's presence. Maybe it's a walk in nature, a deeper study of the Bible than you're able to do during your daily chair time. Maybe it's worship music, but Sabbath ensures that at the very worst, you're never more than 6 days away from a holy perspective. Finally, it includes rest and recreation. Sabbath is a playful space. Like the Bible affirms over and over again that God delights in you. Have you ever thought about that? The Hebrew phrase for delight is laughing knowing, which means God has a laughing knowing of you. He enjoys you. He enjoys spending time with you. And so whatever you choose to do, from cutting wood to reading books to going to the playground with your kids, invite God into that playful space and delight in his presence. Sabbath is God's gift of restful rhythm. And I'm wondering, as you've been listening to this or even this whole series this month, if the Holy Spirit has been pointing out any areas to you where your rhythm of life or your pace of life is out of whack. Maybe one of the greatest expressions of faith that you could achieve right now is to receive the gift of rest. We're going to wrap up this Soul Care series by workshopping this out a little bit right now as we consider a weekly Sabbath. I love you guys.